College football season is Modelo season. There's nothing quite like a college football Saturday. The fight songs, the rivalries, the traditions passed down from one generation of fans to the next. And of course, they're settling in for a full day of football with a crisp Modelo. Because Saturdays are for the gridiron and cervezas. College football is built on tradition, and no one knows tradition like Modelo. From the fan quakes that shake the stadium to the rivalry trophies that mean everything year after year, these traditions are what make Saturday special. So if you're listening to this, consider it your sign. Grab a crisp Modelo, settle in, and enjoy a full day of college football. Because it's just not game day, it's tradition. And those who keep college football traditions alive deserve a Modelo. Modelo is the official beer sponsor of the college football playoff. Drink responsibly. Modelo Especial Beer, imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Can you believe Bob's Discount Furniture opened 35 years ago? Back in 1991, landlines ruled the day. You could not binge watch your favorite shows, and podcasts were science fiction. A lot has changed since then, but Bob's is still doing things the Bob's way, bringing you top-tier style and features at 90s-era prices. Need to kick back? The Sedona Power Reclining Sofa is the ultimate relaxation station. Packed with genuine leather, power recline, built-in charging, cup holders, and Bob-a-pedic seating for just $12.99. You can even pair it with a matching love seat and recliner. And if you love hosting, the Homeworks dining set is built for summer parties with tons of hidden storage in the table and bench, plus comfy Bob-a-pedic foam for only $6.99. And don't miss the best-selling Cascade bedroom set. It features a trendy, reeded design, USB ports, felt line drawers, and three gorgeous finishes at only $2.50 per piece. Stop in this Labor Day weekend to celebrate 35 years of Bob's Discount Furniture.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
What's going on, everybody? It is that time again. The Sooners Illustrated Podcast, episode 268. On this Monday, May 4th, 2026, Josh Calloway, Tom Green here with you on a Monday. We're getting out of the nitty-gritty in the Diamond Sports. OU softball wins an SEC championship again. Tom and I will react to it. We'll kind of spin it forward as the postseason begins. Baseball in a bit of a slide. What's the panic meter there? We'll discuss. And the OU Hoops portal, it's off and running. They've made a lot of additions. It's an interesting group. We will kind of decipher what we make of the team right now because it's a bit of a hodgepodge. We'll discuss on the show today as Hoops Portal. Porter Moser been very, very busy these last couple of weeks. We'll do that on the show today. Reminder, though, before you get started, subscribe to Sooners Illustrated at oklahoma.247sports.com. Promo code SoonersPod60. Get you all one word. Get you 60% off a VIP membership to Sooners Illustrated, the entire 247 Sports Network. Take advantage of it. Be with us every single day. Tons of recruiting intel flowing in. Get into the summer, VIP content every single day. And obviously, it'll be media days in the season, fall camp, all that coming up in just a few months before you know it. So jump in. Be with us every day at Sooners Illustrated. All right. Tom, good to see you. You and I did not do a show last week, so it's been a couple of weeks. Good to catch up with you. We got obviously some Diamond Sports and Hoops Portal's been very, very busy, but good to be back with you, my friend.
Likewise.
If you haven't seen yet, the Sooners Illustrated, we're going to get into the Hoops Portal coming up obviously in a little bit. Sooners Illustrated, we've made a portal edition of our own. We are very excited. Brody Lusk has joined us over at Sooners Illustrated. If you're not familiar with Brody, I think most OU fans probably are at this point, at least if you're especially online, Twitter, what have you. But Brody officially started with us on Friday. We're very excited to have him. If you're a VIP member, you already are very aware of what he brings to the table. He crushes the Hoops Portal, and he's starting to really dive into football stuff. He's going to be a big part of our football coverage as well. And he's already been all over it. His first few days, he's had a ton of great stuff to our Sooners Illustrated subscribers. So be sure to jump in. We're very excited to have Brody. He's going to be a big part of this. I'd imagine he'll be on this show at some point this month. We're kind of letting him get his feet wet. I don't know if he'll be on like an every week thing, but he'll be a regular, I'd imagine. And we'll get that all sorted out, obviously, over the course of the summer. But we're excited to have Brody. We're pumped up, and he's going to be a great addition for us, both obviously on the hoop side, but big on the football side too. So we got bigger and better this weekend. Sooners Illustrated made a portal pickup, and we're fired up about that. So good times right now, and a great time to take advantage of that promo code I said before and subscribe, SoonersPod60, and be with us over at Sooners Illustrated. Great time to jump in. And we'll do some hoops portal on the back end. They actually just made another addition today, shortly before we started recording. Yeah. And we'll dive into all the latest there as well with that roster. But let's start on the diamond, Tom. Big weekend, obviously, for both Diamond Sports, OU Softball, and OU Baseball. We're getting down to the nitty-gritty here. It's the month of May. It's the stretch run for baseball. The postseason starts for softball. Let's start there. They won the SEC again. 2 years, two conference titles. The A&M series over the weekend at College Station was a wild one. It was a truncated schedule because of weather. They start the game on Friday. They have a lead. They have to circle back. Or no, it was Thursday. They had to circle back on Friday, and they lose. After the resumption, they then have to move the Friday night game to a doubleheader Saturday where they win both ends of it, claim an outright SEC title. It was a wild weekend, Tom. The schedule was all over the place. They know if they won two, they would win it outright one, and they would get a share. They got the job done. They won the series. They win the SEC again. They're two for two. First off, we'll start with the weekend that was, and we kind of go big picture on the season and then spin it forward, but this series was kind of wild. I mean, it's another tough team, A&M, on the road. The weather and the schedule shifting certainly makes it difficult. Bit of a gut punch to blow that first game, but then they circle back. They win the doubleheader yesterday. Impressive stuff, right, to go get two out there with all the variables with the weather and kind of everything else going on.
Yeah, really tough to lose that first game because they really seemed in control on Thursday night. You know, up until the weather delay. And you'd think that maybe if that game started half an hour earlier, they would have been able to close out that win. But instead, you kind of go into the, you know, the postponement Thursday, not knowing if or when the game would resume on Friday just because the weather that was going through College Station, and then having to kind of go out there and play basically an inning and a half. And it's just tough. They just kind of, you know, unraveled, gave up. I think it was five consecutive two-out hits in the sixth inning after play resumed, and just, you know, could not find their footing to get that first game. But they came back and responded in a big way on Saturday with that doubleheader, sweeping the doubleheader, winning the first game by one run. You know, I thought it was very impressive in a way that their offense in that first game on Saturday was sparked by Cassidy Pickering, who has basically been in a month-long slump. You know, she was 3-for-28 going into that game, 3-for-29 after her first at-bat, and then, you know, gets an RBI single, you know, a little bit of a fortuitous bounce off the base, but gets an RBI single to kind of get the offense going, and they put up a crooked number. And then Kai Miner comes through and gets the go-ahead run later in the game. So nice for Cassidy to kind of get out of that slump. And then we saw that kind of played forward in the second game when Kai Miner leads off the game with a solo home run. And then a few batters later, Cassidy Pickering hits a three-run home run to you know get them a comfortable 4-0 lead before you know Sidney Berzon even has to take the circle. So I was impressed with the way that they had some situational hitting and just some players finding their finding their own on Saturday. Again, with Cassidy, you know, her batting average dropped like 70 points over the last 4 weeks. That's tough for someone who was an All-American last season and was really playing well for, you know, the first 2 months of this season. Before kind of going into that little bit of a slump there. So I think that's promising for them heading into the offseason that she's got a little bit of confidence now. You know, I think it was her first home run since April 4th that she hit there. Still 17 on the season, which is wild considering how poorly she's hit the last month. But the other thing, you know, the performance that they got from Sidney Berzon on Saturday in that second game, last game of the season, have a chance to win the SEC title outright if you win. And she goes out there, gives you a season-high five innings, strikes out a season-high five batters, does not allow a run, just gives up two hits, and was really in control. You know, she retired the last eight that she faced, and I think 14 of the last 15 batters she sat them down. So just a really solid outing, which you like to see going into the postseason from, you know, a team that has had questions about its pitching beyond Audrey Lowry.
Sure. No, the performance of Berzon, incredibly encouraging. And we talked about it the last several weeks. Like, you're going to need at least a couple of these arms outside of Lowry to kind of get rolling if you're going to go the length of it and obviously win a national title, which is obviously the ultimate goal. Yeah, just incredibly impressed with the resolve. I mean, the way that the Thursday to Friday transpired was really weird and unusual. And like you said, Thursday, I get it for like the TV purposes, and that's why the game was an 8 o'clock start. But you're right. I mean, you could have moved that game up. They decided not to down there in College Station. I don't even truthfully know who makes those calls, if it's ESPN, A&M, a combination thereof, whatever. But they don't move it up. They end up having to stop the game. I was watching, and it, you know, it, you said it. Oakland was in control. Felt like they were definitely going to win the game. Friday, they get back to it. And I was doing some house stuff. I can't remember what I was actually doing at the time, but I actually didn't realize that they were about to play. And then I look up. I was like, oh, they're playing, and they're down. Like, it was in the blink of an eye, and they lost. And Patty Gasso told the story that basically they were in their hotel room studying for finals right now. And then they were basically told, like, hey, we're playing in an hour or whatever it was. And they did, and now that's not, I don't know, it's a slippery thing of like, I don't know if it was, she was trying to make an excuse as much as just kind of like, we weren't ready to play, and like, that's on us, but like, that's what happened. And they got beat, and that was a gut punch of a game that you thought you had, and you had to, and then you don't even get to make up for it because they don't play the Friday game. You have to turn around and play a doubleheader on Saturday, and then they win both those games. And so it's just, you know, we've talked about it all year and for years. Their ability to just kind of be unflappable, and no matter the moment or what gets thrown at them, they are kind of able to respond to it. And so that, I was impressed with that, because that's going to come in handy in the playoff, in the postseason. You don't know what's going to happen with weather or whatever. Like, stuff gets moved around, and you're going to probably have a gut punch somewhere, and you have to get back up off the mat quickly. And that's what they did. They came back and won two games to win a conference on Saturday. And for them to win the SEC again, I remember the conversation. I mean, obviously, OU softball has been the gold standard program. They won four straight national titles in a row. But there was a thought, or a, you know, a conversation in the softball world when they moved to the SEC of like, will they still be as dominant playing top 15, 20 teams all the time? Will they still be able to win the conference every year like they did in the Big 12? It's only 2 years, but two for two. You know, so to go win the conference again, I think is a very big accomplishment for Patty Gasso. And this team fills position well. We'll talk about the postseason in a second. But, yeah, to win the SEC and to just respond after that tough Thursday, Friday, back-to-back with the weather and the loss, that's some good mental fortitude there, I think. And that'll serve you well in the postseason.
Yeah, and look, we weren't down there in College Station, so we weren't around the team this weekend. But I'd have to imagine that Patty Gasso used the fact that they didn't play a second game on Friday to really deliver a message to that team and like really dig into like what was at stake for them on Saturday with that doubleheader. And I thought they responded well. Like, neither of those games was easy. Like, obviously the first one came down to one run, Kai Minor, you know, big hit at the end there to kind of lift them. And the second one, you know, even though you got a sterling performance from Sydney Berzon, you know, the bullpen struggled there in the end, and Texas A&M made it pretty close. You know, Alyssa Parker came in the sixth. She had a, you know, perfect sixth inning, and then ran into some trouble in the seventh, and, you know, gave up four runs before Audrey Lowry came in and closed it out for them. But, you know, not everything is going to be easy, and I think that's kind of, you know, part of the bigger picture of their move to the SEC last year. It's like, this isn't going to be, you know, just parading through every team like they were when they were in the Big 12, but this is still a championship caliber team, as they've shown with, you know, another SEC outright title this year. And, you know, I forgot what the stat is off the top of my head, but I saw Mike Houck, Oklahoma's, you know, lead sports information director. I think he posted 14 consecutive years with either a conference regular season or tournament title. I mean, that's the gold standard right now in softball. It's ridiculous.
No doubt. So they win the SEC title again. Impressive way to end the year. We said it back. I remember in March, it was kind of like, just excited to see them play some better teams. And starting with that Texas series, it's kind of been every weekend, really. And they've obviously answered the bell quite well and ultimately winning the SEC again in the regular season. They now go to the postseason. Let's spin it forward a little bit. And obviously, next week we'll get the NCAA tournament and we'll have a really good idea of what the path looks like, obviously regional, super regional, and potentially even all the way to Oklahoma City. But for this week, they're in Lexington, Kentucky, which is where the SEC tournament is this year. In softball, it moves around campus hosted, although that's changing in the future. It's at Kentucky this year. They are the one seed, obviously, as the conference champ. They get the double bye, so the conference tournament starts tomorrow, Tuesday, but they won't play until Thursday night, the last game on Thursday. They'll play either Georgia or LSU. Those are both teams that they have played this year. They took 2 out of 3 from LSU in Baton Rouge. They swept Georgia at home just a couple of weeks ago. Tom, obviously, you go into this thing, you know, you bought yourself the double bye, so you only have to win 3 games in 3 days to win, unlike some of these other teams that would have to go 5 for 5 if you're playing tomorrow. So they're in pretty good shape, potentially a matchup with Texas in the semis, which is fun. You know, the championship game, if it were to go chalk, it'll be either Alabama or Florida, barring an upset. But a chance to pad the resume a little bit. Obviously, I would think if the NCAA tournament came out right now, I would assume they'd be number one, the number one overall seed. Where are you at with just moving forward into this week and the importance in your mind? Is it important for them to win the conference tournament? Do they need a number one seed? I guess just a little bit of a temperature check for you, kind of spinning it forward into the postseason and now going into the week out there in Lexington.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if they need the number one seed. I'm sure they'd love to be able to get it. Sure. And look, there's going to be a lot of factors at play, even though they're the number one team in the country. I think they're 6th in RPI entering the conference tournament. So there is some discussion about, you know, which team would be the number one seed here come the postseason. But I think Oklahoma's body of work is certainly impressive. What they were able to do in the SEC in the regular season puts them in the discussion with a chance to really cement that in the coming days. So we'll see. I mean, look, they're going to get tested out there in Lexington. You know, they've played Texas, took 2 of 3 down there in Austin. You know, obviously that third game, they kind of lost a thriller there, a little bit of a heartbreaker, even though it was a game where it seemed like they were just kind of experimenting with things a little bit. You know, certainly felt like if they really, you know, wanted to, they could have swept that series. Mm-hmm. Just their approach in that third game was a little bit interesting. Like they were trying to try some different things out. But obviously, look, it's still the defending national champions and your rival. And there's going to be some, you know, high stakes emotions in that, semifinal matchup if they get to it. But then you look at the other half of the bracket between, you know, Florida and Alabama. They didn't play either of those teams this year, if I remember correctly. I can't recall. I know they
right here. Let's see. Auburn, Ole Miss, LSU, Kentucky, Texas, Arkansas, Georgia, then A&M. Yeah, you're right.
Neither. Yeah. So they didn't play the number 2 or number 3 team in the conference this year. So those will certainly, if it goes chalk and they get to the Saturday championship game, I'm really curious to see how they match up with those teams, because obviously, look, them and Alabama, you know, we're neck and neck for the conference title all the way down to the last day of the regular season. So I'd be really curious to see them play. But look, I think that as long as Oklahoma doesn't just get completely tripped up, like they are in a great position to do the 2 things you need to do to get to Oklahoma City. And that is going to be host a regional and host a super regional, where they're not going to have to travel more than 30 miles all the way to the end. So we'll see how that goes, but I think they feel, you know, pretty good. You know, they're pretty battle tested right now. You know, I think there's still some questions about the pitching. We'll see. I mean, look, they're going to ride Audrey Lowry as best they can in big spots, but to get a performance like they did from Sydney Brisson, to see some of the things that you've seen from Alyssa Parker as a true freshman coming in spots, I think is huge. Molly Guachano has had her moments, but has also struggled giving up home runs at a, you know, less than ideal clip, I'd say. You know, it's a little bit of a mixed bag beyond Audrey Lowry, but I think that there is enough there and they have the pieces to go the distance if needed, because look, nobody has a truly dominant pitching staff right now. You're looking at a real live ball era of college softball. I mean, you just look at the home run numbers. Oklahoma's got over 170 this season, shattering the previous record that the 2021 team set. You know, UCLA broke that 2021 record too after Oklahoma did it.
Right.
It's just you got a lot of power out there now, and it's not, can you shut everybody out? It's, can you outscore them and limit their bats as best you can? And I think Oklahoma's shown this season that they've got the pieces to do that.
No, no doubt. I agree. I mean, I do believe that they have a team, certainly capable of going the length of this thing. I agree also. Don't think you need the number one. It's really just about being in the top eight to make sure you can have those first 2 weekends at home before you get to Oklahoma City. Obviously, the higher seed, the better, because theoretically it's an easier path. So you always take the number one if it's there. But right. This team, you know, whether they're one or they're five, like I feel pretty good about where they stand. I'm glad you brought up the RPI because that is interesting. And, you know, I have it pulled up here. We talk about the teams that they could just play. So there's six in RPI, like you said. They could play either Georgia, LSU. Georgia's 15, LSU 11. I mentioned Texas, they're four. And then Florida is five, Alabama is two, and Arkansas is one. So basically what I'm getting at, you should have a chance to pad this quite a bit. I mean, neutral site games in Lexington against all these top 15 RPI teams. If you go win this week, you're going to boost up quite a bit. I have to think if they win the SEC tournament, they're going to be number one. I don't know necessarily RPI, but, you know, in the bracket. And we'll see it all shakes out. You have Nebraska in that mix as well. UCLA, you mentioned, is having a great year. So, I mean, there are other teams that are certainly in that convo. But, you know, the resume boosting is on the table. Now, if they go one and done on Thursday, I don't know. It may depend on what else happens. You know, I don't know. So we'll see. But at the end of the day, not a huge deal either way. But you'd like to have it if you can. So we'll see. It's going to be fun. SEC tournament starts on Thursday. Like we said, they'll play either Georgia or LSU. The game, the way this bracket's listed, doesn't really have a time. The game before, it's at 4, and then it's just after. So yeah. 7 range, somewhere in that ballpark. Maybe the last game of the day on Thursday, hopefully weather permitting out there. I don't think the softball tournament usually has as much issue as the baseball tournament, where whoever they play games at 3 a.m. every single year. I don't think it's quite that extreme out there.
I've experienced those late nights in Hoover, and they're rough. There was one year where, like, I can't listen to an Imagine Dragons song anymore because they played Thunder so many times during a rain delay that elicits this visceral reaction to me. It's hard in Hoover when you're there in, you know, mid to late May, and the weather in Alabama is just so finicky. It's tough.
No doubt. So we'll see. Hopefully, normal times and everything for OU softball this week out there in Lexington. And fun time here. Really excited to get into postseason and also baseball postseason coming up. I've always thought this is a very underrated time of the year. I love the Diamond Sports postseason in May and into June. It's really fun just as like a fan of the sports to watch. So that kind of gets started in earnest this week with the conference tournaments in softball. Let's go over to baseball. It's not going well at the moment, obviously. It's kind of the other end of the spectrum. They lose the home series to Florida. Was a pivotal series. It felt like I'm never going to say anything is for absolute, but it felt like if they're going to get to that host line, probably need to win this series. And they do win on Friday. They rally. They come back. Thrilling win. One of the better wins of the year. And then, Tom, Saturday night, it's on SEC Network. Huge crowd. Place was packed. They grab an early 2-0 lead. Cam Johnson looks good. He goes, he gets a 0 in the first inning. He's looking sharp. And then he comes out of the game before the second inning, hurt his knee soreness. We don't know the severity just yet. And it felt like from that moment on, it was just a nightmare weekend for Oklahoma the rest of the way. Florida jumped all over the bullpen after Cam came out, put up 10 runs. On Saturday, were you trying to play catch up? Couldn't do it. Sunday, they come back. It's a tie. It's tied 2-2 going to the fifth. And then Florida explodes for an 8-run fifth inning where they hit 4 home runs in the inning, hit 7 in the game. It was insane. Balls were just flying out of Kimry. And they lose 13-2. They got run ruled on Sunday. It shows you how quick it can happen in baseball, because Friday night, it felt great, and then you fast forward, not even 48 hours later, and everyone's thinking, like, what happened here? They tumbled 9 spots in the D1 baseball top 25. They're down to 24 now. The good news is there's still huge opportunities. They go to Fayetteville this weekend, and then Tennessee comes to Oklahoma City next week before the SEC tournament, which is like Omaha level of competition out there in Hoover, the aforementioned Hoover. But, Tom, obviously right now, the host chances are – slim. I'm not going to, again, I don't want to say anything absolute. There's no way they have to win the series in Fayetteville. That goes without saying. Probably need 5 of 6 in these last 6 games. Sweep one of the two and win the other one is probably what you kind of are looking at right now. And then maybe that still may not. You may have to go do some damage in Hoover still. I don't know. But just it moves so quickly on you. This is the SEC. Yeah. Every weekend is so tough. And that's kind of also just baseball, the sport. But tough weekend at home. And it's unforgiving conference. Another brutal weekend coming up in Fayetteville. And it just kind of feels like being a road team is they're kind of staring down the barrel of it right now, which is not impossible. So when they went to Omaha in 22, they were a road team. They didn't host that year. So it doesn't doom you. But, tough couple of weekends here and a rough series at home against Florida over the weekend for sure.
Yeah, having a pitcher go out that early and having to throw an unexpected bullpen game is just such a tough spot for any team to be in, but especially like in game two when you've already used some arms in the opener and you still have another game left to navigate after that, it's just a really tough spot to rebound from, especially against a quality opponent like Florida.
Yeah, Cade McDonald for Florida, this dude, Saturday, that was one of the best single game performances I've ever seen from a player, probably in any sport that I've ever seen. The guy hit 2 home runs. He also had, I think, at least a double, maybe 2. I can't remember, but he definitely had 2 home runs. And he came in to pitch in the middle of the game, which is very unique. I mean, you see guys who are two-way players in college baseball, obviously, but typically they start. He came in. He was the DH. He came in like the 5th and pitched like to the 8th and then came. He just came and gave him a few innings and was nasty. And he had a monster. They couldn't get him out all weekend. And obviously, this is back-to-back weekends. Against Auburn the previous Sunday, they hit 6 home runs. And now they hit 7. All of a sudden, early in the year, there was a bit of a problem with walks and putting too many guys on base. Now it's kind of the opposite. Like, they're catching too much plate. It's the home run ball. They're having a hard time keeping teams in the ballpark these last couple of weekends. And, they're an odd team because there have been times this year where they have felt and looked like a legitimately very good team. But then there's, weekends like the one we just had Saturday, Sunday, where it was rough. It was rough. I mean, Florida put 23 runs on the board, hitting the ball all over the yard, and the offense can be a little hit or miss at times. So, we'll see where they go from here. I still think it's a pretty good team, but the Cam Johnson injury obviously looms huge. You need him. You absolutely need him. And I don't know how bad it is. Obviously, it's better that it's knee than like elbow or something. That was the initial fear. It was like, oh no, especially when a guy goes out for a couple warm-up tosses and then comes out, you fear for the worst there. So it's a knee thing, which is a little better, but if it's significant, he's a guy you can't really afford to lose. And they tweaked things around on Friday. They had Caden Leone open the game. Then LJ Mercurius came in the 3rd, which worked pretty well. Mercurius pitched well. They obviously won on Friday. And then Sunday, I honestly liked the move in the 5th inning. It was only 3-2 at the time, maybe 4-2. I can't remember if it was 3-2 or 4-2, but it was still within reason in the 5th inning where Skip Johnson was aggressive with the bullpen. He went and got Korbrager early, put Leone in the game. Again, being aggressive with the bullpen, big game, rubber match, not waiting. And it didn't work out, obviously, at all. I mean, Leon got blown up. Xander Mercurius got blown up. And the game got away from them in that 5th inning. But I liked the move. I liked going to the bullpen, and it just didn't work. And now you're looking up saying, like, what happened here? Like, this just snowballed on us so quickly. So it's an interesting team. There are still opportunities ahead. If you go get 2 in Fayetteville, it's at least, again, we're having the conversation again going into next week of, like, could they? Or, are they still in that mix? But I think if you're an OU fan, you're starting to, seriously look at what are the other hosts? Where do we want to get sent? What's the best path for us to come out of a regional on the road right now after these last couple of weekends? But still a lot of ball to be played. You still have 2 more weekends, and you got the SEC tournament. So who knows? You get hot here these last, few weeks and pile up some wins. Maybe you can get back into that conversation of that top 16, but definitely a seismic blow to the host chances.
Yeah, uphill battle at this point.
Yeah, no doubt. So we'll see where they go from here. Like I said, in Fayetteville this weekend, that's Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And then that was senior day yesterday because, again, as I've been mentioning, I'm sure there's people who still don't even realize they're at Oklahoma City next week, the Bricktown ballpark where the Comets play. is where they're playing their final home, quote unquote, series of the year against Tennessee, which will be really cool. But it did make for an early end of the year. Like, that was the last game at Kimry in Norman, and it was like really early, like May 3rd, and we're not going to go back down to Norman again. It's like kind of weird, but barring a home regional, which, you know, obviously seems less likely now, but we'll see. So tough weekend for OU baseball, but still a lot of season left, a lot of games to be played there for the Sooners. The Sooners Illustrated Podcast will be back after this short break.
Get into a fall state of mind with Pura. Start the season with a free Pura Plus home diffuser when you subscribe to 2 cents for 6 months. Choose from seasonal and best-selling fall fragrances. Swap your scents anytime and set a custom schedule so your home always feels like a crisp, cozy autumn day. Bring the scents of fall like pumpkin, apple, and vanilla home with this exclusive offer only at Pura.com.
Welcome to Chumba Casino, America's number one online social casino. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Explore hundreds of social games, including top-tier slots, jackpot games, and table classics with new games launching regularly. At home, on your lunch break, or relaxing on the couch, world-class entertainment is just a tap away. Score free daily login bonuses and kick things off with a free welcome bonus. Sign up today and discover why over 1 million players choose Chumba Casino to play for nonstop fun. Your next fun moment starts now at Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Now that the school year is officially underway, families are getting a clearer picture of where students are thriving and where they might need a little extra support. It's the perfect time to reinforce what they're learning in class and build confidence along the way. That's where IXL comes in. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand their schoolwork. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts, from pre-K through 12th grade, IXL offers personalized, interactive learning that adapts to each child's unique level and pace. IXL supports classroom learning by providing personalized practice that aligns with what students are already studying. It's proven to improve achievement, with results seen in all 50 states. Plus, one subscription covers everything for all the kids in your home, making it a time-saving and cost-effective choice. It's a resource trusted nationwide, and IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. Listeners of this podcast can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
All right, should we shift over to the hardwood? This is portal talk. A lot's happened. As I mentioned off the top, you and I haven't had a show in a couple of weeks, so they've done a lot since then. It's a weird team. That's kind of where I'm going to start. So I'll rattle off who they've picked up, and you can just kind of take it whatever direction you want. So I think we talked about Kenai Ruth's. Yeah. I think that's it, though. I don't think we've gotten a chance to talk about any of the other guys as I pull up the list, which is taking forever. So they just
Pop Isaacs.
Yeah. Is it Yak Yak? I'm going to go Yak Yak because it's two A's. From Oregon State, big man. They got him just today. Akol Degak from the G League comes in. He's another big man who can shoot it a little bit. You mentioned Pop Isaacs, which is the big flashy name that was kind of like, you know, you and I were texting earlier in the day that he officially announced, and it was kind of like, are you hearing these pop? Like, this is a very interesting name. Is this legit? And then sure enough, it was legit. And then Tyler Hendricks from Utah Valley to go with Kenai Roots from Louisville. They've also since officially gotten Darian Reed and Dayton Forsyth back to go with Kai Rogers and Xavier Brown. Tom, it's a very just, I mentioned it off the top, just an interesting group of dudes. And I don't mean that in a bad way, in that I think like they're not going to be any good. It doesn't feel like a very Porter Moser team, which can be a good thing. I mean, people are, you know, they've been just on the outside looking in to get into the tournament these last several years, you know, last year notwithstanding. But it's an interesting group. I was Lucas McKay, the new GM coming in, and you can tell it's a little bit of a different mindset and approach, it feels like, to this roster. Go whatever direction you would like to take. It's an interesting portal hole for Oklahoma right now. I do think they're not done. I think there's probably another guy or two out there to still add. They still have four spots on the roster technically, but where are you at with this, with what they've done in the portal so far? It's just kind of I don't know what to think right now. It's an interesting group of dudes.
Yeah, I mean, look, you can kind of see the vision with some of these additions. Look, the portal class is not as splashy as it was last year when you had three or four top 60 players come in. But keep in mind, like, part of you know, this, you know, influx of resources is also about retention, and it cost a pretty penny to keep an Xavier Brown, to keep a Darion Reed, to bring back a promising young center like Kai Rodgers, to keep a, you know, quality bench guard like Dayton Forsyth. It costs money to keep those pieces together. And Oklahoma went 4 out of 5 in terms of retention. So there's something to be said there. You know, not many SEC teams are returning 2 starters who average double-digit points. And Oklahoma is doing that in Xavier Brown and Darion Reed. The portal class is really interesting. Like, we talked about Kenai Ruth and how he can kind of maybe be a Jalen Moore type if they develop him properly. Like, that's kind of what the vision is there. You know, Pop Isaacs, veteran player, can score in buckets. You know, real quality shooter. He feels like your Nigel Pack replacement, 1-for-1 essentially. Mm-hmm. You know, not quite as prolific as Nigel Pack has been over the years. He's also dealt with injuries of his own. I believe it was a hip injury that cost him a season a couple years ago in the start of this past season. But he's a veteran scorer who has been in some big moments and has hit some big shots, and really felt like a quick pivot after they missed out on Tylan Riley, the transfer from Tulsa.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of when we started hearing that name, is like as it became clear that they were not going to be able to land Tylan Riley. But then the other big need that they had was the center spot. And they have not really had a quality center these, you know, during Porter Moser's tenure. Like, they got by to an extent with Mo Wagi because when he was on, he was very effective. But he would, you know, so often dealt with foul trouble and struggled to stay on the floor. And they're hoping that kind of this unconventional route that they took, bringing in Akolda Gack, can help elevate them there. I'm really curious to see how that works out. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm still trying to fully understand, like, how teams are able to bring in G League players. I know it's a different scenario than like Alabama was doing with Charles Bediako, who, you know, went to college, forfeited his eligibility, went into the draft, and then played at that level before trying to come back. Whereas, you know, a guy like Gack has not played at the college level. So I think, and I'm not 100% on this, but I think he'll be a senior this year, just assuming that the 5-and-5 rule passes, because this will be his 5th year removed from his 19th birthday. So he would have the 1 year of eligibility on, is my understanding. But if he can give you more than, you know, what Mo Wagi was doing, or if he can give you comparable numbers to what, you know, Charles Bediako was able to do when he was at Alabama, then I think that you're in a better spot, certainly at the center position. And, you know, again, this roster just, it feels different because it doesn't really feel like a Porter Moser team, so to speak, like you said. But, you know, you look at some of the metrics, and, you know, shout out to Brody for pointing this out to our members yesterday, I believe it was. But, you know, you look at like Bart Torvik's metrics, and he has a thing where he kind of calculates rosters based on transfer additions and other incoming pieces. And while they don't have Akolda Gack in there because, you know, he was a G leaguer, they don't have it. If you basically do this roster and sub in Mo Wagi as your center, it's a top 30-ish roster, which, you know, you feel pretty good about. Again, things all need to come together. These guys need to gel, and, you know, you need to do the requisite things to take that next step to get off of the bubble. But I'm intrigued by what they did. I think this is like it's not a top tier SEC team by any means, but I think that they should be able to elevate into that middle tier, you know, the kind of the middle portion of the league this season. And if you're doing that, you are in the NCAA tournament discussion, whether or not the tournament expands.
Yeah, well, that's the other part of the equation, is the tournament appears to be expanding to 76 teams, which is a whole different can of worms conversation. Yeah, I mean, what did you and I, intrigued is a good word. I mean, what did you and I talk about a few weeks ago? Got to get bigger. They're bigger. They're a big team right now. I mean, Gack is 6'11". Yak is 6'11". How big is Kai? 6'8", 6'9", something like that, 6'10", somewhere in that 6'10", range.
6'10".
Kai Roos is listed at 6'10". I mean, this is a Darian Reed's a bigger guy.
A big forward, yeah.
I mean, they're big. I mean, they're a bigger team. And so you put that with the two guards. Like you said, Pop Isaacs kind of goes for that Nigel Pack alongside Xavier Brown. They've definitely gotten bigger. When I say it doesn't feel like a Porter team, it's just kind of, I don't know. It's like getting a G League guy doesn't feel like something he would have maybe wanted to do before. You know, Pop Isaacs obviously is a guy that, you know, I mean, look, I mean, has some baggage, just being truthful about it. And I don't want to get too into the weeds there because I don't know all the details, so it'd be irresponsible on my part to do so. But there's, you know, some baggage there a little bit, and he's bounced around, but he is a good player, obviously. And so it's just an interesting group of dudes. And I am intrigued by it, though. And I do think they have a chance to be pretty good. But you look at this roster, and it just feels like almost like a better version of Porter's first year, where Porter's first year really was like just slapped together. And then it'd be a pretty good team, actually. I mean, they were one of the first teams out that year, shocker. But it just feels like a better version of it, basically, because they have actually some retention to go with it. Like, you know, that Porter's first year was completely from scratch, basically. And so it's an interesting team. Let me ask you this. Put you on the spot on May 4th, starting five. Take your stab at that. I mean, you have two with Brown and Reed. What do you have after that, though?
So Xavier Brown will be your starting point guard. Pop Isaacs will be your starting two guard.
That's just safe.
Yeah. Marion Reed will be your three. Kenai Ruth will be your four. And Nicole Degac will be your starting center. I feel pretty confident in that. You compare this kind of Porter's first team. I think it's very comparable to this most recent team, especially we didn't even get to really talk about, you know, Tyler Hendricks, who very much feels like a Jadon Jones replacement, you know, a kind of a 3-and-D type guy who you can probably trust with the ball in his hands a little bit more than you trusted Jadon. But I see the vision for kind of how you're making up this roster. I think a lot of it just boils down to, can you get better play in the front court with, you know, Cole Degac and Kenai Ruths, and, you know, can Kai Rogers take that step forward and look more like the guy that we saw, you know, in those few games in the Crown than he did early in the season when he just kind of looked lost and, you know, struggled to kind of find his footing at this level. And then, you know, you kind of have Yak as kind of your Kirill piece, like,
yeah,
figure out what that rotation is between those three guys at center. But again, I see the vision, and I think it's kind of similar to this most recent roster, which again was the first team out. So if you can just elevate that play a little bit, I think you're going to be in better position to be on the right side of that cut line come Selection Sunday in, what, 10 months?
I'm certainly intrigued, and it's too bad they didn't keep Kual so they could just have a talk Gak and Yak. It's a bit of a tricky name for the broadcasters out there, team, this year, but – yeah, it's an interesting group, and obviously they're not done. They do have four roster spots to go. Looks like maybe in the market for another guard. If again, subscribe. We talked about off the top. Brody absolutely dominates Hoops Portal, and he has some names that Oklahoma is in on and interested in, especially in particular a couple of guard names. So subscribe, be with us, and I'd be interested to get Brody on the show with us sometime this month to kind of wrap up the portal when we get there, to kind of get his thoughts and everything, because it feels like a – you know, again, it's not quite as flashy as last year, but it does feel like a pretty good haul. And when you loop in what they're actually retaining, like you said off the top, like it's not – they're not having to have a brand new complete starting five. They have a couple of building blocks, a couple of bench guys, obviously with Kai and Forsythe. You know, you can see – like you said it, you can see the vision a little bit. It's a team that I feel like has a chance to maybe be pretty solid. So we'll see.
Yeah, and look, I'm interested to see. I think hopefully we'll be hearing from Porter Moser on Wednesday evening.
Eventually,
But I'm also curious, like, will he be able to talk about these additions yet? Because have they signed?
Yeah.
Oklahoma hasn't announced any of them yet. So whether or not he's allowed to talk about those guys, or if he's just allowed to talk about the guys that they're bringing back, will be interesting to see. But I am really curious to kind of hear his vision for what this roster looks like and what it's been like, you know, kind of working with Lucas McKay this last month or so to figure out, you know, what this team can do to kind of elevate.
For sure. And it's been, yeah, the first offseason with GM Lucas McKay, who, you know, I was up in Tulsa a couple weeks ago. Roger Denny talked about how that was something that he sought to do pretty much when he took the job, was like, this offseason, we're going to get a GM. And Marcus Bowman, the connection there, they lasered in on Lucas McKay. And this offseason does feel different. Like, it just feels like the strategy is different, which, again, maybe a good thing, right? Because, I mean, they've been good, not great, not good enough to get in the tournament, you know, often in this recent iteration. So maybe tweaking the strategy is a good thing. But obviously we'll find out. We won't know until we get into the season. But it's an interesting group right now, and more to come coming up. And like Tom said, we may hear from Porter potentially on Wednesday, Jenny Baranchuk as well. That is the first stop of the Sooner caravan, where Brent Venables will also be there, Jim Nagy as well. I don't know if all these people are going to be made available to the media, or maybe none of them. We don't know for sure just yet, but keep an eye out for that on Wednesday, if so, because Tom and I will be there if we can, you know, to get the kind of the latest there. And it'd be nice to hear from some of these coaches in May, which we usually don't get. So
yeah,
we'll keep an eye out for that later this week. Little programming note there. I'm glad you mentioned that. All right, I think that's it. Mm-hmm. Good to be back with you, my friend.
Yeah,
at Sermon this week for softball. Baseball's out in Fayetteville, so keep an eye out for all the coverage there. Obviously, like we said, Brody dominating the portal. And Brody's also dabbling in, like I said, he's going to be a big part of our football as well. I know he's most known for his basketball work, but he's going to be a big part of our football coverage. He's already provided some recruiting stuff there as well. And obviously, you know, Colin's got the goods every single day as well. So great time to subscribe and be with us over at Sooners Illustrated every single day. Be sure to do that. It's going to be a very big year for us, big off season, big summer, but a very big season when we get there as well. So jump in and be with us now to be ready to go whenever fall camp rolls around. That's it for now. Colin and I will circle back on Thursday. We have another new commit to talk about. He was the first on it with Samuel Nelson last week. So we'll talk about that. Other recruiting news as well on Thursday. Tom and I will circle back next Monday. We'll set the table for the softball NCAA tournament, recap baseball, obviously latest hoops portal news, all that good stuff. We'll do that next Monday as well, and anything coming out of the caravan worth getting into as well. We'll obviously get to do that next week also. So that's it for now. For Tom Green, I'm Josh Callaway, signing off. See you next time right back here, as always, on Sooners Illustrated.